half now about the four foundations of mindfulness and the Eightfold Path. And this is the last talk in that series. We began last week talking about right mindfulness. Let me just say, for those of you who are new, the four noble truths are the truth of suffering, the cause of suffering, that there's freedom from suffering or the cessation of suffering, and then the path that leads to freedom from suffering. And the path itself is articulated as the Eightfold Noble Path. And so we went through the different limbs of the path of right understanding, right aspiration, then right speech, right action, right livelihood. And then the last part of the path is the contemplative part of the path of right effort, right concentration, and right mindfulness. And so we've been looking at these different ways and areas that the Buddha highlighted. He said, pay attention here. These are important places to pay attention to our experience if we want to live a life of awakening. And so we've been looking at them over a number of months. And then we're talking a little last week about mindfulness very squarely in the context of intensive meditation practice. And I'd like to continue a little bit with that and then expand it more to mindfulness in daily life. So I'll begin with a story about Ikkyu. Ikkyu was a Zen master in the, I think, 1700s. A very famous Zen master, kind of a rogue Zen master. He got into a lot of trouble at times, but he was also quite revered for his authenticity, his authentic Zen practice. And at the end of his life was made the abbot of the biggest monastery in Japan, the most prestigious. Because even though he'd been kind of a little bit of a bad boy, you know, like it, at that time in Zen, when your teacher confirmed your enlightenment, you were given a certificate, right, that said you're enlightened. So of course, Ikkyu ripped it up immediately and threw it away because he really understood that how meaningless a certificate was in terms of what was happening. Anyhow, so Ikkyu had, at some point, a very wealthy patron came who had donated a lot of money for his monastery or his temple and wanted, he said, I want you to give me the teachings and I want you to write it as a calligraphy, because he was well known for his being a calligrapher. And he wrote it attention in the Japanese script. The patron was really a little infuriated. Come on, I've given you a lot of money. I want the whole teaching. I want really good teaching, and I want a beautiful calligraphy. So Ikkyu took it back, and he wrote, attention, attention. And now the guy got really mad at him. I've supported you, and I gave money, and I'm not going to give it. You better give me something good. And so he took it back, and finally he gave him the final version. It said, attention, attention, attention. Pay attention tonight. Pay attention to me, but even more important, pay attention to yourself. Pay attention to your experience. Pay attention to your body. Pay attention to the coolness of the air as it touches your skin. Pay attention to the hardness of the floor if you're sitting on the, and you don't have a cushion under you, or the chair. Pay attention to the shape your body's taking right now. And you don't have to do a lot, you don't have to think about it, but it's a reorientation or a redirection of how we usually allow our attention to go. Now we're going to pay attention to what's happening more in the phenomenology of our experience, in the directness of our experience, in the in the various senses of our experience without being fully enchanted by those senses. We want to know them, we want to feel them, we want to experience them. Pay attention if you're bored. Pay attention if you get excited, interested in the talk. Pay attention to what happens in the silence. If I don't talk for a while, it might get really awkward. Then we would pay attention to that. It's not so important in mindfulness practice what's happening. It's not that something should be happening, but mindfulness is a cultivation of a quality of attention. And so my talk hopefully will point you at that quality, but that quality is not in the talk itself. The quality is in you, the capacity to be mindful, to pay attention in this way that kind of knows what's happening as it's happening, is a quality that comes from you, doesn't come from outside of you. It's why the Buddha could say that in this fathom-long body you'll find the whole world. Because the world is based on the quality of your attention. How you know the world is based on the quality of your attention. How we experience the whole world is based on whether we're here or not. I could talk for the next 3 minutes, and at some point, some of you might not even hear what I say because your attention will be captured by maybe some thought or feeling or your body experience. Or conversely, sometimes I could be talking and somebody could fall asleep right next to you and you won't even notice until they snore. And then the snoring will all of a sudden take your attention and you'll be aware of that. There is a kind of power to where we put our attention. Consider for a moment or reflect for a moment about your own understanding of the quality or the capacity of attention. What's it like when you're actually really focused on something? Let's say your body for right now. If you really pay attention to your body, what happens? As I start to tune in to my body, to what's here, to the aliveness of the body, I'm actually aware of that quality. Oh, there's aliveness here. It's not a thing. It's not dead. There's a vibration that happens. There's a warmth. There's a density to my experience of my body. There's the breath kind of shows itself quite naturally because the body's breathing without any effort on my part. There's a sense of the air and then space. Like my hand keeps moving in space as I'm talking. And then when I look out from the body, then actually I begin to perceive the space in the room as well as all of you. Then even the touching of my hands is a little warmth, pressure. And the orientation is not simply outside, but it's within the living phenomena of what's here, the living reality of what's here. Not so much as an idea of body or Eugene or anything, but just this kind of changing, morphing, tangible and yet not solid experience. This is mindfulness of the body. This is knowing the body in direct experience of the body. This is knowing the body not as an idea or a memory, not even so much as a gender or even a human being. It's less conceptual than that. The concepts may come, but they're really a little bit in the background to the directness of the experience. And the Buddha invites us to practice, to be mindful of our experience and to know it. And the knowing that even the conceptualization is not something you have to do so much. As mindfulness deepens, it happens quite naturally. A clinical psychiatrist questioned Suzuki Roshi about consciousness. "I don't know anything about consciousness," Suzuki said. "I just try to teach my students how to hear the birds sing." So become aware of the sound now. And just know that it's sound. That's mindfulness of listening, mindfulness of hearing. Totally simple, ordinary, except not the usual way we relate to sound. Usually we're always identifying sound or talking about it to ourselves. We say, oh, that's somebody speaking, or that's a car. That's actually a secondary process to just hearing and knowing that sound is happening. Being aware of the body, being aware of sounds as they arise. What is it that knows? What is it that knows the sound? What is it that knows the body? Sometimes these same sounds happen all the time. We don't pay any attention to them. All of a sudden, when I say pay attention, then, oh, there's the cars. There's the sounds arising. And the knowing of it. The knowing is the mindfulness. And you could think, oh, hearing, or sound, or you could just know that that's sound. You don't even have to use the conceptualization. If I ask you to pay attention to what you're feeling right now, what is it? What do you notice? Maybe there's some boredom or confusion. And remember, feelings in Buddhism also include mind states. Emotions, feelings, technically it's called mental states. And so being aware of the state of your heart and mind right now, without trying to change it or fix it, and definitely not to judge it. Mindfulness is not a judging of our experience. It has way more to do with the acceptance of our experience, of an openness to our experience, of the capacity to know experience and not cling to it. And so the feelings come like the sounds, maybe a little bit more patterned, but generally they come often, generally unbidden, unasked for. Sometimes unwanted, sometimes wanted, but they just come. And often we're enchanted by them. We get, in Buddhism we would say entangled, enthralled. The word thrall comes, same as the word serf, means to be a slave. Mindfulness is, in one sense, to be totally in contact with our experience, and at the same time, to find that capacity of mind, mindfulness, that is not bound by the experience that's happening, that knows the experience with a spaciousness or an openness, and kindness, an acceptance, but not in the thrall of the experience. Seeing the experience for what it is, something transient, something ephemeral, something, in Buddhism we would say, it's not solid, empty, not in the sense that there's nothing here, but in the sense that it doesn't have true solidity, permanence. Notice your thoughts for a moment. And it's a little tricky, because sometimes as you start to pay attention to thought, they actually go away. Or they don't happen in the same way as when we're usually totally immersed in the thought or absorbed in the thinking process. But every once in a while you can start to see, oh, I'm thinking. There's these thoughts happening. And they may be good thoughts or bad thoughts or true thoughts or false thoughts, but it's just a thought. And we often don't even question, well, what is that? What is a thought? Pay attention right now and tell me what's a thought? Anybody? Can anybody tell me what a thought is? Pardon? Who's saying that? I can't see. Oh, there. A construction? Like scaffolding or a building or? Okay, it's a kind of construction. Of what? So it's somebody here saying it's a focus of the mind, right? Can be. Let me just say that we can focus on thoughts, and the mind can focus in that way, narrow in that way. But that's not what a thought is. At least I would question that. That's what the thought is.
Right?
Memory is a certain kind of thought. Memory, planning, wanting, wishing, imagining, fantasizing, thinking, analyzing, constructing. These are all ways we use thought.
Isn't that a desire?
A desire? Can be. There can be a lot of thoughts of desire. I bet there were a few during the meditation here tonight. Oh, I hope he rings the bell soon, you know. It's a desire.
Expression of consciousness?
Expression of consciousness, okay.
It's like a bunch of words that are kind of floating around and hook up with each other and create a concept.
So a bunch of words floating around that kind of hook up with each other. Sounds like a kind of metaphysical singles bar. Please see Gail afterwards. So, what I'm pointing to, I actually don't know what a thought is, so I don't have an answer for this question. But to look in our actual experience at what thought, because the value of starting to be mindful of thoughts is how seriously we take our thought. And there's a good reason to be serious about it. The Buddha said, it's with our thought that we create the world. It's with our thought that we create the world. And we do. We live in the world of our thoughts most of the time. We actually believe that's the world. It's like we live in this world of thought. And the whole world's out there. But we either live in the thought or live in seeing the world through how we think about it. Through this kind of cornucopia of, I don't know what it is. I don't even know how to describe a thought. Concepts. A lot of concepts. And Mindy will help me.
Filter?
Could be. It's definitely a way we make sense of the world a lot through our thinking, and we see through the thought. And it's not a bad thing. Thoughts are not bad. I mean, it's through our thoughts we create the world. Somebody thought of this building. Somebody thought it'd be nice to have these banners, you know? Somebody thought it'd be nice to get a microphone and a speaker and tables, and I mean, everything comes out of thought, so it's very powerful thought. But there's nothing there in essence. And it's one of the, so to be mindful of thinking, to be mindful of our thought, reorients us from being in the thought or identified with the thinking, identified with the content of our thought, and to begin to recognize that it's simply some kind of process, thought. And at least from the Buddhist tradition, important here to say, as we pay attention, as we're mindful, what we're paying attention to are what's called the six sense doors. The body, all the sense doors of the body, seeing, hearing, tasting, touching, smelling, and the mind is considered a sense door. And the mind, and for those people who are new, the word mind and heart is the same word in the culture that the Buddha comes from. The word is citta. It means both mind and heart. And so mind, or thinking and emotions, feelings, mental states, are all considered part of a sense door. And so if you have the mind, it will think. If you have a heart, it will feel. Just like as you have eyes and they work, you'll see. Or if you have a nose and you're near the flowers that are really wonderful here, you'll smell the fragrance, because that's what noses do. We're usually not quite as identified with fragrances as we are with our thinking. And so the Buddha invites us to be mindful. He says it this way. He says, practitioners, there is a direct path for the purification of beings, for the surmounting of sorrow and lamentation, for the disappearance of pain and grief, for the attainment of the true way, for the realization of nirvana, namely the four foundations of mindfulness. And then he says, what are the four? Here, practitioners, bhikkhus is the word that's used. A practitioner abides contemplating the body in the body, ardent, fully aware, and mindful. So let me pause here a second, because there's an important piece. He's giving the four foundations of mindfulness, but he points to three aspects of what it takes to be mindful. A practitioner contemplates the body in and of the body, in and as a body, ardent, fully aware, and mindful. Mindfulness is to be mindful is one quality of mindfulness. It's interesting the way he teaches it. So let me jump back. Last week I mentioned that this is the Satipatthana Sutta. It's the four foundations of mindfulness. Satipatthana is a certain kind of process, a certain way to orient the mind. It's a capacity of mind that includes being mindful, ardent, and fully aware. And the ardency is really the heart quality of mindfulness. It's devoting ourselves to the present moment. It's dedicating ourselves to the immediacy of what's here, not to what's happened in the past or what's going to happen in the future or how we think about things or how we've known things or how things are supposed to be, but we begin to devote ourselves to what's actually here now. Not our ideas about now, but our direct experience of now. And the fully aware means even as we focus our attention, we're aware of the context of what we're doing, that we're sitting meditating, we're meditating in a room with other people. They may all fade away for a while, but it's part of the context of what we're doing. To be fully aware means even as I focus on one area, that other areas may fall away, but I know that they're there. Sometimes if I want access to them, I can have them in a moment. To be fully aware means that I'm aware of the full context. Sometimes this is called Now I'm not being fully aware, right? I can't remember the other term for it. Clear comprehension. That one of the qualities of sati or satipatthana, including ardency or devotion or a dedication, a heartfulness, or another way we could say it, is a wholeheartedness in practice. And then there's this clear comprehension of what we're doing. We're turning our attention in a certain kind of way to be mindful. And then the mindfulness is the knowing of what's happening as it's happening. And these are the qualities. And then he gives the different areas to pay attention to that he highlights. He says, one abides contemplating the body in the body, ardent, fully aware, and mindful, having put away covetousness and grief for the world. And then he continues, he says, one contemplates feelings in the feelings, ardent, fully aware, mindful, having put away covetousness and grief for the world. One abides contemplating the mind as mind, ardent, fully aware, and mindful, having put away covetousness and grief for the world. One abides contemplating mind objects, or dharmas is another way to say it, or phenomena, ardent, fully aware, mindful, having put away any covetousness and grief for the world. And so the practice of mindfulness is a contemplation. And it's the division the Buddha makes is to help us to highlight areas to pay attention to, body, feelings, the states of mind and heart, and then the realities of each moment. And he in that last foundation, he gives a lot of different ways to pay attention. And so pay attention right now. What's the state of your heart and mind? Instead of just believing it, and by believing it, I don't mean to suggest it's not here. It is here. But what's it like to turn your attention so you're not fully just in the thrall of it? Whatever it is, even if it's good or bad, or you like it or you don't like it, if it's pleasant or unpleasant, how is it to begin to know it with a fullness or a spaciousness, an openness, not judging it, accepting it fully, but don't identify fully with it? To be mindful is to bring this kind of attention to our experience and then to develop a continuity of this capacity so that we can study in our direct experience the reality of the human experience. So that we can study in what's happening here in this body and heart and mind, what is the reality of human experience? What's true in human experience? What, even we could say, what's of value? What's important? How, given as we begin to look closely, carefully, attentively, as we begin to contemplate, and that's a really beautiful word. Contemplum means as if in a temple. Contemplum, as if in a temple. Sometimes it's called sacred attention or wise attention. And it's attention that begins to accept things as they are, but not simply believe them, or not simply assign our usual or conventional value to them. Oh, it's good or bad, or it's right or wrong, or it should be here, or it shouldn't be here. No, it's begin to look at it in a slightly different way. What happens as I simply allow it and pay attention? Can I do that? And then what happens as I start to build that capacity to do that? So that capacity of mind becomes sustained. And this is why meditation instruction, practice, and retreat is important, to begin to build a capacity of mind or sustain, nourish a capacity of mind that we're not trained with so well. Our training is more in logic, analysis, pragmaticism, practicality, all good things, all good ways to train the heart and mind. But the Dharma asks us to train our mind in a slightly different way, to become mindful, so that there's a fullness of mind, and that fullness is an inclusiveness, is an openness, is an acceptance that knows. And that knowing is not bound by what it knows. And that is one of the, and I'm stressing that because it's the key, it's one of the keys to the freedom that the Buddha points to when he says these four foundations of mindfulness lead to the surmounting of sorrow and grief, for the disappearance of pain, for the attainment of nirvana. Nirvana is freedom. Freedom not based on conditions, not based on having our experience be a certain way, our body be a certain way, our feelings be a freedom is not based on having a certain feeling, not even having a certain state of mind. Suzuki Roshi again, he said, enlightenment is not a state of mind. States of mind come and go. The body changes. Even in a sitting, it's comfortable at first, then it gets tired, then all of a sudden some energy comes. Your feelings have changed already. Maybe you were really excited to be here. Maybe now you're really bored about being here. Maybe you're a little irritated. Maybe you feel really happy all of a sudden, or peaceful. Or maybe you're confused, and then there's some clarity. Emotions, feelings, states of mind change. Mindfulness asks us to begin to look at the process of what's here. Heidegger said it something like this. He said, human beings are not a thing or a process, but a vehicle for the absolute to reveal itself. Or we could say a vehicle for the Dharma to reveal itself. And the Dharma is already here. Mindfulness asks us to begin to look at what's happening so we begin to see the universal truths of what it is to be a human being, that things are impermanent, they're changing. In one sitting, the truth of impermanence reveals itself over and over and over again. Nothing stays the same. If we cling to anything, if we try to hold on to anything, if we try to fixate anything or reify anything, we'll suffer because of the truth of impermanence. And that as we begin to look at our whole identity, our whole sense of self is based on some solidity, some permanence that is ephemera, that is an idea that is based on conventional reality. And so we begin to see what are called the three characteristics of of impermanence, of transiency, and of transparency or selflessness, non-self. Mindfulness is a kind of phenomenological inquiry. It's an inquiry, not an analytic inquiry, it's a contemplative inquiry, where we begin to learn about our experience in the directness of the experience itself. What is this? It's a great Zen question. A Zen master came to a retreat at the Insight Meditation Society, a three-month retreat. And Jack Kornfield and Joseph Goldstein, Sharon Salzberg, invited him to give a talk. And the Zen master got up and he looked at the people. They'd been sitting for 2.5 months. And he said, 3 months of sitting? Waste of time. What is this? Because the this is always now. That's the this we're looking at. What's happening now? What is this now? What is this reality now? What is this experience now? And the confusion sometimes is we're not looking for a conceptual answer. I'm offering you a conceptual question. What is this? But the answer is in your direct and immediate experience. To keep looking, that's where the answer is. It's not in an idea. An idea may come from the direct experience ultimately, but the actual answer is in your direct, vivid, alive, ephemeral, transient, transparent immediacy of now. That is in this fathom-long body and heart and mind. The simple version in the Buddhist text goes like this. This is from Bahia. It's a famous story in Buddhism, Bahia, who was a practitioner who wanted to be awakened. He was a very sincere practitioner, and he discovered that there was a Buddha, and he went in kind of magical and mythological time in one night and found the Buddha and said, please, Buddha, teach me Dharma. And the Buddha was about to go out for his alms round and holding his bowl. He said, not now, Bahia, this is not a good time. And Bahia, who was, you know, was already somewhat accomplished, he kind of trumped the Buddha. He said, you know, Buddha, we don't know how long we have. You or I could die at any moment. Please teach me now. And the Buddha was hungry, and he knew that if he didn't get to his alms round soon, then he couldn't go, because he had a rule, you couldn't go after a certain time. He said, no, Bahia, it's a bad time. And Bahia was persistent, as a good practitioner can be at times. And he said, no, I really need, please tell me now. And so the Buddha, who traditionally, if you ask three times, he would accede. And so the Buddha responded with this very simple teaching of mindfulness, of the practice. He said, in the seen, just the seen. In the heard, just the heard. In the sensed, just the sensed. In the cognized, just the cognized. He said, train yourself in this way to be aware, to be mindful. In the seen, just the seeing, just what's seen right now. Or in the sound, just be aware of the hearing. Or in the sense, just be aware of the sensation. Or in the cognized, just be aware of the process of thinking. In the simplicity, and this is the hardest part for most of us, is we're not used to this level of simplicity of being. We're used to much more complexity and thinking about and ideas about and reactions to. We're not used to the simplicity of being. We're used to a lot more doing. Joko Beck says it this way. She said, practice is just hearing, just seeing, just feeling. This is what Christians call the face of God, simply taking in this world as it manifests. We feel our body, we hear the cars and the birds. That's all there is. So when talking about these four areas, these four foundations, Bhikkhu Bodhi put it this way. He said, the four foundations are a comprehensive system designed to train the heart and mind to see the true nature of body, feelings, states of mind, and the whole world. The endeavor is made to contemplate the ever-shifting flux of experience itself in order to penetrate through to the essential nature of bodily and mental phenomena. The Buddha invites us to be present for our life, for to be present in the immediacy of our life. And it's why we love to be in nature. Often we don't think so much. We enjoy the beauty, the pleasure, the wind. If we go out, even if it's not a nice day, if you go out to the ocean, the wind's really strong, you're really there with the wind. You're really present with the direct experience. It's why people like making love, because we're really there in the fullness of the experience. We're not in our, if you're really making love with someone, you're not in your idea about making love. You're not in some memory of what it is. You're not in some belief. You're in the direct experience. It's why people love sports or athletics, because we find ourselves totally present in the experience. Mindfulness simply asks us to be aware of that fullness of presence that's possible in the simplicity of being. To begin to recognize the beauty and the mystery of our lives as it unfolds now and now and now. And then to watch the impact of what that has upon us. And so you could do it in a long meditation retreat and watch the impact. It changes the whole way we relate to the world, our whole understanding of the world. Or in our daily life, Thich Nhat Hanh, in talking about the Buddha having a conversation with a philosopher. The philosopher said, I heard that Buddhism is a doctrine of enlightenment. What is your method? What do you practice every day? The Buddha answers, we walk, we eat, we wash, we sit down. Pretty simple. What's so special about that? Everyone walks, eats, washes, sits down. Sir, when we walk, we are aware that we are walking. When we eat, we are aware that we are eating. When others walk, eat, wash, or sit down, they are generally not aware of what they are doing. In Buddhism, mindfulness is the key. Mindfulness is the energy that sheds light on all things and all activities, bringing forth deep insight and awakening. This is the promise or the possibility of mind. Fullness of this ardency, of this awareness, of this focusing of attention. Notice what it's like if tonight when you go home, you actually do the dishes and just do the dishes and be aware of that whole experience. Or if you have a snack later, don't do anything else but eat the food. Pay attention to it. Pay attention to what happens in your heart, and the wanting of the food, and then the reaching and placing and chewing and swallowing. And then try something more complicated. Sit down at your computer. Sit down at your computer and type at the keyboard, but don't turn the computer on. No, I'm serious. This is can be a very interesting way to begin to become mindful at a complex operation by doing it and not actually doing it yet. You can do it driving. Just go sit in your car and be mindful, but don't go anywhere. And it'll help orient you to being mindful in more complex activities. And for all of us, we need to practice. The mindfulness on the cushion is one thing, and mindfulness in daily life uses the same principles, but needs to be practiced in daily life also. If you just believe it'll translate, it will translate some from the cushion to daily life. But actually, I've never been satisfied, even though I've done a lot of retreat sitting. I still find the need to really think about, oh, I'm going to do this as a practice now. I'm going to go to this party and see what it's like to be mindful at the party as a practice. Or I'm going to give this talk and see what it's like to be mindful as I'm giving the talk. And you could practice seeing what it's like to be mindful as you listen to the talk. The last thing I'll say about mindfulness is I hope I'm offering these words in a way that doesn't make it sound exotic, because it's right here. We are the temple of our own contemplation. It's not anywhere else. And the possibility of awakening is also right here. It's not anywhere else. This is from Hakuin, Zen master. He said, "Followers of the way, the Dharma of the heart has no form and yet pervades the 10 directions. In the eye, it is called seeing. In the ear, hearing. In the nose, smelling. In the mouth, talking. In the hand, grasping. In the feet, walking. Fundamentally, it is one light. Differentiated, it becomes the six senses. When one's whole heart comes to a full stop, one is delivered where one stands." So notice where your attention goes now. Notice what it's like to know wherever your attention goes. Maybe it goes to your body and you're tired, achy. Maybe it goes to your thinking and there's thinking there. See what it's like to know the thinking, know the body. Maybe there's a mood of interest or boredom or a sense of kind of curiosity. Or maybe you feel shut down. Whatever it is, doesn't matter what it is. The power or the capacity of mindfulness does not exclude any human experience. I guess I'm saying a little bit more. I'll say it this way. This is from Stephen Batchelor. He says, "Awareness is a process of deepening self-acceptance. It is neither a cold surgical examination of life nor a means to becoming perfect. Whatever it observes, it embraces. There is nothing unworthy of acceptance." Let's sit for a minute or two before we end. May the merit of our time here this evening, our attention, our sincerity, the goodness of simply being, may it be for the benefit of all. May it go out in the world in every direction. May our very lives be for the benefit of all beings. May all beings be happy and peaceful. May all beings be free from suffering, from the suffering of war and fear, division and racism, from the suffering of greed and hatred, ignorance, confusion. May all beings in all worlds be free from suffering. May all beings awaken. May all beings realize their true nature, their Buddha nature, the nature of wisdom and compassion.